Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. With gas prices climbing above $4 a gallon, Republican presidential candidate John McCain reversed himself on his position on offshore drilling in the U.S.
We're not going to pay $4 a gallon for gas because we're going to drill offshore, and we're going to drill here, and we're going to drill now.
McCain has also said he will review his position on drilling in the Alaska Wildlife Refuge. And the climate has been improving for oil industries. They faced an uphill battle when it comes to drilling rights in the Anwar, a problem generally understood to be related to the fact that their arguments tend to fall apart in the face of evidence from environmental scientists. But as the general public began to hear more and more from U.S. corporate press outlets and politicians about lowering gas prices through added offshore drilling, they began to support it. The truth is, giving the oil industry greater access to offshore drilling in the Pacific, Atlantic, and Eastern Gulf regions will not have a significant impact on domestic crude and natural gas production or prices before the year 2030. That's according to the Federal Energy Information Association. Even then, reductions would be only pennies on the gallon. The overall amount of oil gained by added offshore drilling would be far too small to make a difference in terms of U.S. independence from foreign oil or prices. Philip Budzig of the U.S. Energy Information Administration wrote the analysis of crude oil production in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge after a study requested by Senator Ted Stevens.
Because ANWR is located in the Arctic Circle, it takes a lot more time to explore and drill and get oil and gas equipment up there, like drilling rigs. So generally, when we did our study, we assumed that it would take at least 10 years before production would start in ANWR. In other words, if the Congress opened up ANWR to oil and gas drilling, it would take approximately 10 years before you would start to see any production. And then it takes a while for the fields to build up to full production and so on.
Emily Sarusko with the Arctic Wilderness League joins us to talk about the dangers of oil drilling in the Arctic and the negative impact it would have on both animals and people living in or near the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. Then Tom Goldtooth of the Indigenous Environmental Network provides an overview of his platform on drilling. Goldtooth is a nominee for Secretary of the Interior. He's running with the Backbone Campaign and has the support of PBS legend Bill Moyer. First here is Ohio Republican Senator John Boehner, House Minority Leader, speaking with CNN's Glenn Beck about drilling in the Anwar. According to Emily Sarusko, Boehner has received $600,000 in campaign contributions from the energy industry.
In ANWR, the coastal area, the 1002 area, is just east of it. It's a broad coastal plain. There is nothing there. There is an Eskimo tribe that lives near this ANWR area, a group of 240 people who actually want us to drill because they know we can drill in a responsible way, but there's nothing there.
On Wednesday at 5 p.m., we'll be hearing from Lucy Beach. She's executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee of the Gwich'in Tribe in Alaska, and she'll be explaining what's at stake for indigenous tribes like hers that have lived and hunted in the Arctic for thousands of years and are now suffering with the after effects of drilling. She'll be explaining how tribes are under pressure both from Congress and the oil industry. We wrote to Representative Boehner to ask him about the potential impact to tribes and to the environment of drilling in the Anwar. And we received a letter from his spokesperson, Steve Ford, who said, quote, "We can protect the environment and produce more American energy to reduce gas prices. And that is precisely what House Republicans will continue to call for in the weeks to come until Speaker Pelosi finally relents and allows a vote on the more American-made energy." We turn now to Emily Sarusko of the Arctic Wilderness League. Emily Sarusko, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Congressman John Boehner appears to have taken the easy route through the North Slope of Alaska. Just go over your latest report on his recent delegation there.
Right. He led a delegation to the North Slope and kept talking about how they were going to visit the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And in fact, they never set foot in the refuge. They did a flyover of the refuge, and based on that quick glance, you know, from thousands of feet above, they claim that the refuge is a barren wilderness, that there's no wildlife that lives there. We, of course, know to the contrary that that's not true. The coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, where they're hoping to drill, is home to more than 200 species of wildlife, and it's a critical place for many types of wildlife, as well as indigenous people.
Am I pronouncing this correctly? It's the Gwich'in people?
Right.
They see this land as sacred. Why don't you talk about their plea to keep the Arctic Wildlife Refuge pristine?
Right. For one thing, they sent a letter to Boehner and the delegation inviting them to meet with them when they were in Alaska, and Representative Boehner didn't even have the courtesy to respond to the invitation. And for the Gwich'in, they have been relying on the coastal plain of the refuge for thousands of years. They live off of the caribou that migrate to the coastal plain. They go there to actually birth their young, and for that reason they call it the sacred place where life began. And the Gwich'in can tell their story much more eloquently than I can, but that's basically what they're fighting for, is to maintain their way of life that's, you know, been thriving for thousands of years.
According to your website, alaskawild.org, and listeners can go there to see some amazing photographs and also stories, it does say that there's 20 million acres that comprise this last place on Earth, really, where an intact expanse of Arctic and subarctic lands are protected. What would be the overall result if, you know, big oil companies were to gain access in this climate of panic that's existing both in Washington and amongst the American people who are paying high gas prices right now?
Well, the fact that big oil is leaving out of this discussion is that the amount of oil that is speculated to be found in the refuge would only lower gas prices by maybe 4 cents a gallon. And that is not for another 10 years or so. It takes a lot of time to actually get the oil online. And then that figure, which, you know, is not something I came up with, it's something that the Bush administration's own Energy and Information Administration came up with, that 4 cents a gallon, you know, would happen at peak production, which is estimated to be in 2025. So we're not talking about a lot of impact here. I mean, what we're really talking about is a lot of rhetoric that's not backed up by fact.
We're speaking with Emily Sarusko of the Alaska Wilderness League. They've set up a new website, shameonbigoil.org. Emily Sarusko, how important is this campaign? I know that the Wilderness League has been working on these issues for many years. Is it all of a sudden coming to sort of an epiphany here, a sort of a do-or-die moment?
Well, I think it's a critical issue for our country. We're really at a crossroads here in terms of our energy policy. And this is an opportunity for us to embrace clean energy that, you know, won't destroy our last untouched wilderness places, and that will sustain us through the years. I mean, oil is a finite commodity, and we need to find ways to thrive without it. And that's been a long time coming, and I feel like we're at a critical place.
Now, we also saw a report that was commissioned by Ted Stevens of Alaska, and that report did say that the drilling in the Arctic would not lead to lower gas prices anytime soon, and that the amounts in question are negligible. Just go over the level of dialogue right now in Congress. Why didn't that report sort of end the discussion?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think the answer is big oil. It's in big oil's interest to get as much land as they can. And the fact is they have access to millions of acres that they're not using. And, you know, in order to maintain their stock prices and to please Wall Street, they need to grab as much land as they can. I think that's the real motivation here. And you know, big oil has put a lot of money into lobbying Congress And I think we're seeing the results.
I know you've pointed out Representative John Boehner has gotten $600,000 from energy interests, but he has made such impassioned pleas to allow big oil to drill in these protected lands. Why does he care so much?
It's a good question to ask him. But I feel like it's, you know, sustaining the old way of doing things. They seem to be interested in the status quo, maintaining the status quo, and keeping America addicted to oil. And that's exactly what we're going to continue to be if we continue along the road that we're on.
Well, from what you've said, there's not much in drilling in this pristine wilderness for the American people, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I have a 15-month-old son, and he's the reason I'm fighting for the Arctic to keep it wild, because I want him to be able to go see it someday. I want him to grow up and still have a piece of wilderness left in this country. I think that's vitally important for our future generations. I mean, that's what makes this country what it is. That's what makes this country amazing. And to destroy it for a few pennies per gallon is ridiculous.
Now, when you look at the history of oil industry advances across lands that they've said and promised that they would not destroy, we see a legacy of oil spills and destruction to the land, both through the drilling process, through roads, through development of other kinds of energy resources like coal. There's been, though, a recent set of spills to talk about, and I know British Petroleum has just spilled, is it 200,000 gallons of crude across the North Slope 2 years ago?
Right.
Talk about the impact of those spills.
They're devastating. And they're not only devastating to the wildlife, they're devastating to the people that live up there. If you go to a town of New Ixit, the New Ixit is located right next to the Alpine oil field, and ask the people there what it's like to live in a place that's saturated by oil. They will tell you stories of staggering increases in asthma among the residents there. Haze in a place that's, you know, in the Arctic wilderness, that they're living with hazy conditions, and gas fires that happen. They're called flare-ups. So it really is devastating. And, you know, we've all heard of the Exxon Valdez spill, which is not in the Arctic, it's farther south in Alaska. But the devastation still exists there. That spill has not been cleaned up. Oil companies talk about environmentally sensitive drilling, and that's just not possible. I mean, when you have the threat of spills, and when you have the infrastructure that's needed that, you know, will be spread out over thousands, millions of acres, you're talking about major destruction here.
In the coming weeks, we're going to be discussing some of the reasons that a wide range of activists are working against drilling in the Anwar. Your website, Emily Cerusco, is alaskawild.org, and it describes impacts on food resources, salmon and caribou. And then there is the problem of global warming, plus the fact that the oil industry has been acquiring so much power, and there are concerns about their voice overshadowing the voice of the voter, where, in particular, regions of impact are located, such as Alaska, America in general. Just go over the problems related to food and other resources that you've been identifying in terms of drilling in the Arctic.
Well, much of the wild salmon is found in southeast Alaska, particularly in the Tongass National Forest, which is the largest national forest in the country. The Tongass is affected by things that are happening to the north of it because of the impacts of global warming and because, you know, the ecosystems are linked. Alaska is what we call the poster child for global warming because, you know, the average rise in temperature across the globe is about 1 degree at this point, and Alaska has seen 4-degree increase. That means that the permafrost is melting, that certain types of pests, insects that were killed by the lower temperatures before are surviving and thriving and have already, you know, destroyed millions of acres of forest land in Alaska. You know, people are starting to see the effects there's villages along the North Slope that are seeing the land disappear before their eyes. So the salmon is definitely an issue. And then also, you know, in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, there's hundreds of bird species that gather along the coastal plain. They say about 135 different bird species. And these are birds that migrate from everyone, all of our homes. You know, these are birds that we see out our windows that go up to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge as part of their migration, and it's, you know, critical for them. And then, of course, there's, you know, everyone's heard about the polar bear. The polar bear used the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for a critical denning site. The females build dens along the coast there and birth their young. And they are very sensitive to any kind of disruption to that, just like the caribou.
We've heard a lot about the melting Arctic ice caps, and I want to ask you about another problem, which has to do with the tundra itself.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm given to understand is that not only melting ice coming away from these lands, but also the tundra itself is actually going to become a very severe problem in terms of global warming, because it's going to be releasing gas, right? And that is going to create further global warming. Can you fill us in on that at all?
Right. No, it's a vicious cycle. The more the permafrost melts, the more gases are released. And like you said, that's CO2 that causes global warming. So we got the oil companies up there drilling for more oil so that we can burn that oil and cause more CO2 to be released. And then we have the permafrost melting, releasing those gases.
Now, I know that before Hurricane Katrina hit, there were scholars throughout Louisiana pleading with people in the Bush administration to listen, pleading with the American people to read their reports, really, and they were getting very little attention. But they were reporting on the potential damage to the environment of a major hurricane, not just the damage to the cities, which they did predict. They predicted the levees would break. They also were very worried about the impact of drilling off the coast of Louisiana, because evidently it was actually causing shifts in the earth where all the wetlands used to serve as a buffer for those lands against storms. Now we were reducing those wetlands down, and we were also literally pulling out portions of the oil and taking water, and so the land was sinking. I mean, these reports went unheeded. Are there similar scientific reports about the Arctic that you'd like to call our attention to?
Yes. As I said, there are villages along the coast there that are seeing the land both sink and recede. And, you know, you can go out there and see for yourself. They actually may have to relocate people because their villages are going to disappear. Global warming is still somewhat intangible to those of us in the lower 48. Because we don't see the effects before our eyes. For the people of Alaska, it's real.
I've heard various reports on NPR in particular about resources hidden underneath this ice in the Arctic, and how, you know, the tundra and parts of Alaska and the Arctic are going to be subject to what amounts to another gold rush, because investors are going to rush in to get all these great resources. What's the downside of the receding ice, and even if it reveals these resources?
Well, one thing that they're not talking about is that we do not have the technology yet to drill in those conditions in the Arctic Ocean. The prominence of storms, the weather conditions, the thick ice, and the cold water all make it very difficult to both extract the oil and then also transport it. And they have pipelines under the water there. They can actually be severed by floating ice. It's really not something that we've perfected yet. So the chance of spills is really a problem. And the U.S. Department of Energy's Marine Management Service has estimated that the chance of a spill in the Arctic Ocean, a major spill, is something like 40 to 50%. So I mean, that's something that we're going to have to deal with before we can really go in there and extract those resources.
Which oil corporations have shown the most interest in drilling in the Arctic, do you know?
I mean, they've all shown interest, but Shell and BP are probably the predominant ones up there right now.
What about the interest shown by Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson to one of the top wage earners in the world, $13 million in direct payment and another $13.5 in stock grants, plus other perks, Tillerson becoming one of the world's wealthiest people because of oil? Let's talk about the difficulty of average Americans as they try to compete with the Rex Tillersons of the industry for congressional attention. What are they up against?
Well, I mean, Big Oil is funding a major PR campaign that I'm sure most of your listeners have experienced. It seems like every time you turn on the television, there's another commercial about how Big Oil is promoting clean energy. And in fact, if you look at Exxon, they're spending 10 times more on their PR campaign than they are on renewable energy. They're talking about how clean they are, but in fact, it's all false rhetoric. So the advertising is really deceptive, and that parlays into Washington. It gives them cover. So what we're trying to do is talk about the facts here and talk about what's really going on. If we can get the facts out there, people will understand that, for one, the drilling is not the answer, and two, that drilling is in the interest of Big Oil, not the American people.
Now, we've seen for years that Wall Street follows the price of oil these days. So does the value of the dollar. And this all influences the U.S. economy and the global economy. But I understand that there's a relatively new development here. The House Select Committee on Independence and Global Warming recently did a report on the oil industry engaging in these vast stock repurchases, and that these have shot up from $8 billion to about $60 billion recently, the oil industry just awash in cash and using that cash to develop further ways of dominating the industry and controlling the money. So Big Oil has a tremendous influence in Washington, too. In response to all of this power that they have, what kinds of things can listeners do?
I think the key is to just start talking and to spread the word. I really feel the more that people hear the truth, the more they're going to stand up and get angry and stand up to Big Oil. Just because they have their awash in cash doesn't mean that they're going to prevail, because we're a country that's built on the power of the people. And I have a lot of faith in the people of this country that once they hear the truth, they will do the right thing. As far as tangible things that people can do, talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, call your elected officials and let them know that you are not going to stand for Big Oil to decide the agenda. And, you know, one thing that people don't realize is that the American people are funding Big Oil, not only by buying their product, but the government gives them, this is a report that was put out by Friends of the Earth. They found that the government has given Big Oil $32.9 billion in tax breaks, subsidies, and other handouts, and that they will receive that by 2013. So in the next 5 years, that's $32.9 billion that we're just handing them. So it seems like that's the first thing, is telling our elected officials that we'd rather spend that money on a viable energy future than, you know, padding the pockets of people like Rex Tillerson. So we just need to spread the word. That's really what we're focusing on now, is spreading the word, because the American people will do the right thing.
You have a list of congressional town hall meetings on your website. Can you go over what that activism is about and how it's working?
Sure. Well, right now, the Congress is in their district work period, which some people call a recess. But the Congress likes to call it their district work period, which means that they're all back in their district and they're talking to their constituents. And so what we've done is we're encouraging people to go to these town hall meetings that they've set up to talk to their constituents and say, you know, I understand that, energy is the biggest issue on Capitol Hill right now, and I want you to know that I will not stand for drilling in our last wilderness places. You know, we want them to go and let them know that the big oil does not decide our energy future. The people of America do. And the people of America want a future that's sustainable, a future that's not going to harm our planet, a future that's not going to destroy places like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Emily Cerusco, thank you so much for explaining this complicated issue to us, and do let us know about whatever's going on, and we'll certainly get it on the air.
Great. Thank you, Dorian. Thank you for all you do.
Emily Cerusco is with the Arctic Wilderness League. Bill Moyer of Bill Moyer's Journal on PBS sent out audio from a project called the Backbone Campaign, backbonecampaign.org, and we're going to end with audio of Tom Goldtooth with the Indigenous Environmental Network.
Our nonprofit Native Environmental Justice Organization can be accessed through the website www.ienearth.org. I am also a nominee for Secretary of the Interior on the Backbone Campaign's Progressive Cabinet. People around the country are concerned about the protection of our public lands, the protection and conservation of our endangered species, natural resources, and parks is paramount towards maintaining respect for our Mother Earth. During the past years, the integrity of the Department of Interior has been failing. High-ranking political appointees within the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the Department of Interior have systematically distorted, manipulated, and misused the scientific process prescribed by the Endangered Species Act. We must have an agency with leadership and a Congress that can create policies that promote scientific openness, allow scientists to do their jobs, and punish those who inappropriately interfere with the scientific process. The Indigenous Environmental Network is calling attention to the Minerals Management Service, a department within the Interior that released its five-year plan calling for aggressive oil and gas leasing in Alaska's federally managed offshore, what's called the Outer Continental Shelf, including the Beaufort Sea and the Chukchi Sea. Offshore oil drilling will not reduce the price of gasoline. Offshore oil development poses a serious risk of oil spills, potentially impacting many of the species that inhabit the Chukchi Sea that are important subsistence resources, including bowhead whales, walrus, beluga whales, and fish. I hope that you challenge candidates for Congress to stand up for the true protection and conservation of our Mother Earth. In order to assure the Interior Department is accountable to its duties to prevent abuses of the public trust and provide effective leadership, please ask candidates for Congress these two questions. One, our organization is concerned about the Cobell lawsuit against the Department of Interior for mismanaging billions of dollars in oil, timber, and other royalties held in trust for some half million Native Americans. The elemental issue is the failure of the U.S. government to be responsible stewards of oil, gas, and timber receipts and other royalties held in trust from Indian lands as far back as 1887. The issue of our government to not account for the money it held in trust is a serious breach of fiduciary responsibilities. Please ask the candidate for Congress on how she or he would assure our U.S. government could reach a fair, generous settlement agreement with our Native American plaintiffs in this important case. Two, if you are elected to the U.S. Congress, will you co-sponsor legislation renewing the Outer Continental Shelf moratorium that guarantees the protection of America's coasts, beaches, and marine ecosystems from the threats of oil and gas development? Thank you very much.
For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program produced at the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions. And we'll link to the Backbone Campaign.